My prayer today is that as you look back on this last season of your life, and I know your parents, as you look back on this, that you'll see God at work, that just like the song we sang today, man, who am I that you keep me on your mind? God, I'm just grateful for you. Man, what an incredible, incredible song. And this morning, as I've prayed and prepared for this message, really to address seniors, graduating seniors, but really everyone in the sanctuary, I've thought about our lives, our faith, and what it means to run this race, this faith race. A faith that endures, and having a faith that endures. And this morning we're going to be reading from Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. And Joni Erickson Tada was a teenager. When she was a teenager, she was in a diving accident that left her paralyzed from the shoulders down. And in a moment, someone who was independent, who was full of life, became entirely and completely dependent on other people for even the simplest of tasks. She tells a story in the early years of after this accident, how she wrestled with deep depression and she was angry at God. And didn't understand why God would allow something like this to happen. But over time, something powerful happened. Instead of her faith disappearing, it deepened. And she began to cling to Christ in a way that she never had before. She learned how to paint by putting a brush in her mouth. She started a ministry that now serves thousands of people with disabilities around the world. And for decades, she's continued to speak and write and testify to God's goodness, even while living in constant pain. What makes her story a strong picture of endurance isn't that she was healed or that life got easy, it's that she kept trusting Jesus even through that. And she said this, sometimes God allows what he hates to accomplish what he loves. And that is enduring faith. My prayer for you, seniors, my prayer for me, my prayer for my family, my prayer for our church as a whole is that we would have a faith that endures. And really, whether you're graduating or whether you're 70 years old, we're all running a race. Every single one of us are running a race that requires faith, that requires endurance. So how do we have how do we build a life that has endurance? How do we endure? And the book of Hebrews gives us some principles for building a really solid foundation. And so we're going to read from Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. And while you're turning there, I just want to give you a little context behind this passage, because it's typically shared at like a you may have heard it at a FCA event or something like that, because it has some athletic connotations. But Hebrews was written before the destruction of the temple. It was written sometime between AD 60 and 70. It was written to Jewish Christians who were facing persecution under a Roman emperor named Nero. And Nero had a reputation for being a demented tyrant. He was an evil person. And you may have heard the quote that it was said that he fiddled while Rome burned. There are historical records of Nero tying up Christians and using them to serve as human torches in his garden. He was a very evil person. And the author, so this is the context that this book is written in. These are Jewish Christians who are facing persecution. In chapter 10, if you read through the book, you'll see that they've had land taken from them. Their things have been plundered. And the writer of Hebrews, the author of Hebrews, is writing them because he is trying to encourage them to endure in their faith. The author doesn't give us his name, but we know that he was closely associated with an apostle by reading Hebrews chapter 2, verse 3. And endurance is a theme that runs throughout the book. And as I was preparing, I just sat down one day and I read the entire book, from the entire letter from start to finish. And one of the couple of the verses that really jumped out at me was Hebrews 6, 11 and 12. It says, "Now we desire you to demonstrate the same diligence for the full assurance of the hope of your hope until the end, so that you won't become lazy, but you will be imitators of those who inherit the promises through faith and perseverance." His desire was for them to have endurance. And our desire, my desire, our desire as a church for you is that you would have endurance in your faith. And so there are three principles that he gives in these verses. We'll just read the verses. Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. "Therefore, since we also have such a large cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us lay aside every hindrance and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that lies before us, keeping our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy that lay before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, so that you won't grow weary and give up." The first thing that he tells us is to remember the winners. Anytime you see the word "therefore" in the Bible, a good Bible student knows that you need to go back and see what it's there for. And so in chapter 11, we see those who ran before us. Chapter 11 is called it's known as the Hall of Faith. And he calls them a large cloud of witnesses. And he's not saying that all of these people are, all of these witnesses are looking down on us and watching us as we run our race. He's telling us that their lives testify to how faithful God is. He mentions 16 people in this chapter, and I won't say much about all of them, but I just want you to consider a few that you've heard. First, consider Abraham. Consider the faith of Abraham, who obeyed God by going to an unknown land and trusted God's promises, even being willing to sacrifice his son, believing God would fulfill his word. I want you to think about that. Abraham went to a place that he didn't know. You thought choosing a college is hard, right? Abraham, God told Abraham to go to a place he didn't know where he was going. He trusted God and he followed God. Consider Moses, who rejected the temporary pleasure and treasures of Egypt and instead suffered with God's people because he trusted in the greater eternal reward that God was promising him. Moses trusted God. Consider Rahab. trusted God by believing his power in protecting the Israelite spies, choosing faith over fear, even at great personal risk. And if you think, man, how could God use somebody like me? Someone in the hall of faith, Rahab, was a prostitute. God uses people that we would never believe that God would use that type of person, but God did. He used Rahab, and you find her in the hall of faith. And at the end of this chapter, the tone kind of changes a little bit because he mentions some groups. He doesn't mention them by name, but he says that there are people who have suffered greatly. They were stoned for their faith. He even says they were sawn in two. Can you imagine having the kind of faith that you would be willing to give your life? What kind of faith would do that? It appeared to me as I was reading this, I was like, I started to wonder, did some of these people maybe know some of the people in that group? And as I studied, some scholars think that it could be possible, but they said there's really no way that we can know for certain. But I think one thing that's really important is you and I need people. We not only need to look at the lives of those who ran before us, but we need to look to those who run beside us. It's important to have people who are winners at faith. I thought about a couple of some people who I have personally known who have helped me grow in my faith. And I see them as they get older and I see them continuing to serve the Lord, continuing to be faithful to the Lord. I think of some pastors. We have some fantastic pastors at our church. Brother Greg, Brother Nick, two of the most greatest guys to work with. We have a great staff. Lisa is fantastic. I think about some pastors in my younger days. Some of you know them. John Daniels. And John Daniels was a person who poured into me when I was a young believer in Christ. I could call John right now and just bare my heart to John. I've watched him. I've admired his faith. And he continues to serve the Lord. I think about guys like Gary Permenter, who's going to be the camp pastor at our summer camp. Gary was a huge influence in my life. He's somebody that walked beside me. I think about a guy named Ray Cummings, who really encouraged me when I felt called to ministry. I think about my youth pastor, Nathan Fitz, who is still a youth pastor. All of these men, people who have run beside me, we need these type of people in our lives. Also think about parents. I had a mom and dad who loved Jesus. They weren't perfect by any means, but I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that their faith was the most important thing to them. I saw them love each other. I saw them reading their Bible regularly, like it was a regular thing for me to just walk in and to see my mom or my dad reading their Bible. I saw them make church a priority. It was just something that we did as a family. Their faith was authentic. It wasn't perfect. It was genuine. And it was on display for me. And parent, can I tell you, the greatest gift that you can give your teenager, the greatest gift that you can give your child is to let them see you model genuine faith. Give them opportunities to grow in other areas. Give them opportunities to excel at other things, but make sure that you're helping them build a faith that lasts. The last one is partners. Man, we need friends who challenge us to become more like Christ. Our closest friends need to be friends who push us to be more like Jesus. In 1954, Roger Bannister was the first person to run the mile in under 4 minutes. At this point, nobody ever thought that this could be accomplished. But 46 days later, a guy named John Landy broke Roger Strabanisher's record. And that year, they drove the record down second by second. They needed each other. They needed to push each other to be better. And in a similar way, we need friends to push us to grow deeper in our devotion to Christ. If we're going to have a faith endures, we need to remember the winners. Next thing we need to do that the writer in Hebrews tells us, it says that we need to remove the weight. You'll see in Hebrews 1, it says, "Let us lay aside every hindrance and the sin that so easily ensnares us. Let us run with endurance the race that is before us." He gives us two things, two weights that we need to remove. Every hindrance. So in ancient Rome, athletes would train wearing weights. Like that, they would wear weights, and then when it came time to compete, they would remove the weights. Now, this bat, by the way, bats have come a long way since I played, since the old black and gold, East and Black Magic, or the silver and green Easton bat. They've come a long way. But really, and this bat belongs to Colin Holmes. I saw Colin hit a home run earlier this year with this bat. And lots of times, now this is called a donut for those of you who are unfamiliar with baseball. This is used. It's a training weight. So when you're in an on-deck circle waiting to bat, you're swinging your bat, you're trying to get loose, you've got a little extra weight on your bat. This donut actually doesn't belong to Colin. I think it belongs to his sister. And if you looked at it, you'd see it's got sprinkles on it. So it's... B.A. has a weighted bat that they swing in the on-deck circle, so Colin doesn't really need a donut with sprinkles on it. But you would never step to the plate with a weight on your bat because it would tremendously slow your swing speed. I don't know if any of you watched baseball yesterday, but baseball was wild yesterday. Jacob Parker from Mississippi State in the seventh inning hits a grand slam for Mississippi State to tie the game. Do you think Jacob Parker would have had a weight on his bat? No, he would have never had a weight on his bat when he came up to the plate because it would have kept him from performing at his very best. You'd never step to the plate with a donut on your bat. Slows your swing speed down. And in a similar way, the author of Hebrew tells us that we need to remove anything that slows down our pursuit of Jesus. Even if it's not a sin, he tells us to remove every hindrance. There are things that hinder us from following Jesus. The need to be liked for some teenagers is a big deal. If you're going to follow Jesus, guess what? You just got to get over it. There are going to be people that do not like you. You've got to accept that, and you've got to realize that if I'm going to love Jesus, I've got to love Jesus more than what I think someone else thinks about me. There's the weight of fear of the future or worry. There's the weight of a relationship that could be pulling you away from Christ. There's all these distractions that we live with. And you can't just say teenagers live with them, because I've seen adults who struggle with cell phones, social media, constant scrolling, comparison. All these things can hinder us. It is a weight that will keep us from following Jesus. But there's something else. The next thing he says is the sin that so easily entangles. Sin is deadly. Sin will destroy your faith. I read a story that the deadliest snake in the world is Australia's inland taipan is what it's called. The venom from one snake, one bite, enough venom to kill many grown men. Some people say the bite enough to kill 100 men, 100 grown men. So imagine you come home, you find this snake in your living room, coiled up. What would you do? You wouldn't keep it as a pet, right? You'd grab a shovel and aim for the head. We have something far more dangerous in our homes and in our hearts. Sin, sadly, too many people play with sin instead of putting it to death. The Puritan John Owen said, "Be killing sin or it will be killing you." One of the fastest growing addictions in our world today is pornography. Its effects are devastating. It's destroying young men and young women. It's destroying marriages. Have you ever wondered why there is so much deviant sexual behavior in our culture? It's because of pornography. And if the statistics are right, then there are many people in this room who struggle with that. And for those trapped in this addiction, the guilt and the shame can weigh you down and become unbearable. Some people say that this is really the biggest issue that the church may be facing today. I started reading a book because I want to be someone who can be a better help for someone who might be struggling with this book. I started reading a book called The Freedom Fight. In the book, there's a story, a true story about a teenager who goes to one of his pastors because he's struggling with pornography addiction. And his youth pastor asks, "Can I bring your dad in on this? He's thinking, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to give this dad a chance to disciple his son, to help his son through this sin. And the son agrees, and the pastor goes to his dad. Weeks pass by, and the dad hasn't said anything, because he's struggling with the same exact thing. The reality is that the shame of sin will cause you to hide. And your struggle may not be pornography. It may be some socially acceptable sin, like gossip or overeating or materialism or unforgiveness. But sin is sin, and the writer of Hebrews says that we need to get rid of it. So how do we get rid of it? How do I drop the weight? How do I drop this burden that's destroying me? There's two things that the Bible tells us. Confession is the first step. God says in James 5:16, "Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed." If you want to remove the weight, if you want to find freedom, then you've got to do something really hard. But it's worth it. If you want to be healed, you have to bring it into the light. You have to confess it. And the second thing that the Bible tells us is to get into the Word. John 8:31-32 says, "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed him, 'If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" If you want to be free from sin, if you want to drop the weight of sin, then you've got to get in the Word. The truth will set you free. The Center for Bible Engagement, some of you may have heard this study. The Center for Bible Engagement did a study. They studied over 1,000 people. And here are the findings that they found. If you engage in Bible reading 1 to 3 times a week, you would think that you would see some noticeable difference, but 1 to 3 times a week, there's almost no noticeable difference in a Christian life. 4 times or more a week, the results in massive, tangible changes. Here are some of the findings that they found. If you read the Bible 4 times or more a week, you're 228% more likely to share your faith. You're 407% more likely to memorize Scripture. You're 59% less likely to view pornography. You're 30% less likely to struggle with loneliness, depression, or anxiety. So if you want to drop the weight of sin, then you've got to confess and you've got to get in the Word. And the last thing that he tells us is this. Run to Jesus. Keeping our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, for the joy that lay before him. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, so that you won't grow weary and give up. Remember who he's writing to. He's writing to Jewish Christians who are under persecution, and he's telling them, hey, if you want a faith that endures, then you've got to fix your eyes on Jesus. He spends the first 10 chapters telling these Jewish Christians how Jesus was the fulfillment of the Old Testament. He tells them over and over how Jesus is better. He says Jesus is better than the angels. He's superior to the angels. You think about all the time that the angels presented a message in the Bible. He says Jesus is better than the angels. He says Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus is a better high priest. Jesus is a better covenant. Jesus is a better tabernacle. Jesus is a better sacrifice. If you want a faith that endures, then you've got to believe that Jesus is better than anything. If you don't have a love, if you don't see the beauty of Jesus, if you don't behold the beauty of Jesus, then your faith will not endure. When we take our focus off of Jesus, our faith fails. When we look to other things to satisfy us, to give us our deepest satisfaction, our faith fails. When we try to work our way to favor with God, our favor fails. When we look for security in material possessions instead of Jesus, when we look at our lives and we see prayers that God hasn't answered or we don't think he's answered and we're like, God, I can't trust you. How can I trust you? But just like Joni Erickson Tada, her faith grew deeper. She learned to trust deeper because she knew that God had something for her. And we have to believe as well. We have to see Jesus is better than anything. So my question for you, for me this morning is, do you desire a faith that endures? And is it what your heart longs for? Do you want to, whatever situation you're in, do you want a faith that will follow you all of your days? Then what weight do you need to drop? What sin do you need to kill? Maybe you need somebody to run with. Maybe you need a church family that you need to run with. And maybe today you would say, hey, I want to be a part of First Baptist Brookhaven. We would love to talk with you about that. In just a moment, we're going to have a time of response. Brother Greg will be here to receive you. He'll be here to pray with you. I'd be glad to pray with you. God wants you to have a faith that endures. What's your next step? Do you need to start the race? Maybe for the first time in your life, you need to place your faith in Jesus and say, God, I need you to rescue me. Would you give me a faith that endures? Would you give me a new life? So this morning, we're going to enter a time of response. Our worship team is going to come up. How do you need to respond today? What is your next step to have a faith that endures? I want to invite you at this time to take that step. Come and pray. Come be a part of the family of God. Come to faith for the very first time. The Lord is calling today. What's He calling you to do?